You're listening to All Things Git, the podcast that talks about the popular Git version control system and talks to the people who build it, build tools on top of it, and make their teams successful using it. I'm Edward Thompson.
And I'm Martin Woodward.
Hey, Martin, how are you today?
Very good. We've got another special guest on the show again this week.
Who do we have this week?
We have Sarah Ford. Yay! All Sarah's right. Back at Microsoft. She's now on the Azure AD B2C team. What does that mean? I don't know. Lots of acronyms. We'll get her to tell us. Previously, she's obviously worked with you at GitHub. And then, you know, she worked at Microsoft before that a couple of times, I think, Sarah. It was definitely. She started a career working on Microsoft developer tools, including Visual Studio and Coplex, where really made a name publicly, and was one of the great alumni of Coplex PMs that are obviously the best people in the world. She also authored a couple of books on Visual Studio with Microsoft Press, and very, very popular Visual Studio tips and things like that. People will know her from that as well. In 2011, she became a Distinguished Fellow in the Department of Engineering at Mississippi State University. Wow, we are honored. That's amazing. And in 2015, Sarah received a master's degree in Human Factors at San Jose State University because she wants to make developer tools more usable. Sarah's lifelong dream is to be a 97-year-old weightlifter so she can be featured on local news. This is the best bio I've ever read, Sarah. Welcome to the show.
Hey, y'all. Thanks. Hey,
how you doing?
I'm good. I'm awake, I promise.
Yeah. How's life treating you back at Microsoft?
It's good. It's so different. It's different in the good way. It's just, I've only been gone. Well, I've been gone from developer tools for about 6-7 years, and you know, coming back, it's like, you know, seeing everyone, like seeing so many people using GitHub, and you know, for the in working publicly and being engaged in Stack Overflow, it's just like wow, when did this happen? When did the tide switch? When did it go from the minority to the majority? So it's, you know, it's like a different place,
but in a good way.
Yeah, it's really incredible.
Yeah, cool. So this is obviously the Git show, so we'll talk about Git, but before we do that, do you want to explain what it is you are doing in the day job right now? So Azure AD stands for Azure Active Directory, so that's our, like, that's the thing that connects, you know, for logins and stuff and connects to Active Directory, but out in the cloud. So what does the B2C part mean?
So B2C, just as you would expect, business to consumer. When I first heard the name of the team, I thought, okay, job number one will be to relearn how to say the alphabet, because it was just a bunch of letters at the beginning, Azure AD B2C. But it's basically identity as a service. Right, so basically, I'm on the Azure identity team. But if you think about Azure or identity as a service, so let's say that you have an app and you want to be able to have users log into your app using their social identity provider, like sign in with Twitter, Facebook, or you want to be able to manage like users signing in with like an email address or some local account, something like that. This Azure AD B2C is a service. And yeah, I'm getting a crash course on identity, how Azure AD works, what's a tenant, everything you can imagine about identity. So I'm just, it's really great just to be able to focus on a new technology stack, something that I probably, like if you told me even like a year ago, this is something I would be looking into, I would be like, no way, I'm too shy, I'm too intimidated by all that. But no, it's been great just to dive in and learn something, a completely new stack, completely out of my comfort zone.
You're a distinguished fellow. What are you doing with imposter syndrome?
Just to, I know, right?
On, you should, okay, be like,
I was thinking about that earlier when I was putting together my bio. It's like, hey, I'm a distinguished fellow, and I have no idea what I'm doing. Here are all the questions that I need help.
You should hang out with Jeffrey Snover and Mark Rasanovich in the speaker room next time, or something like that. You know?
Oh yeah, could you imagine? Is there an imposter syndrome podcast? Maybe that's my calling, is to go and I just talk to everyone else who has imposter syndrome about like how do we even like get through our days.
It'll be you'd have no shortage of people on the show. Anybody I know who is any good,
oh, that's true,
at this job, assume, you know, assumes it was just a fraud trying to be found out. It's the people that don't think that I always worry about, you know? it's the ones that are, like, think they're amazing.
The ones that think they're great.
Yeah, yeah. Or they're, just,
they're the ones that are actual frauds.
They're well, definitely, but also they're the ones that are so stupid they don't know how much they don't know, you know? So
I just realized that it's kind of like karate when people are like, oh, you got a black belt, you know everything. And it's like, no, a black belt just means I know exactly how much I do not know.
Awesome.
Well, you're making progress when you get to that point. You're at the consciously incompetent part of life. That's great. Cool. Anyway, we should talk about Git, probably.
So, Sarah, so Martin mentioned this when he introduced you, that you used to do a Visual Studio Tips. And I remember when you were at GitHub that you were blogging a tip of the day for using Git, and especially Git on Windows and Git inside Visual Studio. How did your tip of the day come about?
Well, that came about because I wanted to learn Git myself. And the way that I teach myself, the way that I learn things, is I blog about it. It's I don't know if anyone else does this. I've heard that a few people do, but it's like if I need to learn something like a new technology stack, I have to start writing about it. Even like my OneNotes, I swear I should just like make public one day. Anytime like I'm coding something, every time I make like that aha moment, even if it's just to get something to compile, like a new method call, something like that, I always blog about it. So every day I'm pretty much journaling, and I'm not sure why. It's just something from, I guess, like elementary school, high school, that I got into the habit of like writing things out to be able to learn it. It's like the act of writing out helps me to retain things. And I hate like not understanding how a software project works, like a software tool works. And Git is just this like, okay, when am I going to like conquer this beast? When am I going to figure out the magic light bulb moment of what it takes to be able to think, I want to compare this file to its version of itself in this different branch at this point in time, without having to like Stack Overflow or grab a book or my cheat sheet and look back and say, okay, what are these commands? Like, I want to be able to get to that point where it's almost like learning a foreign language. I want to be able just to think in maybe this is the right, you guys can tell me if this is not the right approach, but I want to be able to think in the commands to say, okay, what is it that I want to do versus having to, like, I don't know, think about something in English and then have to, in my head, translate it in French. I just want to be able to think French when I talk to Git. I don't know. But, yeah, and so that's how it came about. I figured, well, I mean, that was kind of like the approach I did with the Visual Studio tips. And I also just miss, like, good challenges. And I also miss doing that. It was, like, a lot of fun doing the VS tips. And there was so much more I realized now I could have gone with that series and doing other things, or like the 101 demos in 55 minutes, like challenge that I did a few times. I could see myself doing that with Git somehow. I don't know how, but that's the thing. It's like I wanted to just have like big challenges. And so that's how where it came to play was just like, okay, there's just so many unknowns and I can't stand that. And I need to like face my fears. And the best way to do that is just by challenging myself to blog every single day.
Awesome.
There's a big difference between just doing the stuff you do to get by and then the stuff you need to do, you know, like doing some cherry pick merge across branches and blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? I always have to look up that stuff. I can think in Git in terms of doing, you know, the basic workflows and handling multiple remotes and then pushing my stuff up to the server. But as soon as I've got a pull request that's nice and neat, how I like it, you know, I can do a bit of squashing and things if I have to try and make it, to craft the commit so it looks nice. But as soon as I have that, like, if it's different across branches and things, I still don't know how to, I have to look that up every time.
Same here, actually.
I don't know. What about you, Ed?
No, it's the same for me.
Yeah.
Do you really? I figured you two just actually just know this stuff.
No,
I generally just push it. Like I would. It's easy for me to push the Git repo up to GitHub or VSTS and do a diff there.
Oh, that's interesting. So for me, it's I know what I want to happen. You know, I know that the way I want my tree to look. I know the way I want my history to look, and I'd never remember the exact command to get me there. So I have to kind of work from the other direction. Like, I know what I want to happen, and I could, sometimes I actually bring up some libgit too and just do it that way, because I can never remember the commands. So I'll actually like write some C code to make it happen instead. I'm really embarrassed to actually admit that.
You're a special person. No, it's the thing I found that was, again, when I was getting into Git, you know, we were still getting into Git and learning it, and you know, I was getting worried about having to sort of start teaching people about Git, because we were going to be taking a lot of Microsoft people over to GitLand, and you know, how is that going to work? Because here I am, I'm a fraud, I don't even know how to use a damn thing apart from checking in, you know, apart from committing and pushing and what have you. And then I was at, I think I said this in a previous show, I was at a Git merge and sat around the table, and there's like Pef, you know, Jeff King, and like a bunch of the other like lead committers for Git, all sharing tips on how to do different workflows in Git and trading commands. And I'm like, oh, everybody does this. It's not just, you know, idiots like me. It's the people who write the thing also struggle. So, yep. Shows you how usable it is, but there you go. Git's won, so that's that. So, when you are doing Git stuff, you talked about the commands. What sort of are you using the Git command line? Are you using git.exe on Windows or posh Git? You know, what's your Git developer environment typically?
So for me, my developer environment, I guess it depends on what I'm doing. If I'm working on code, like as in source code in Visual Studio, I tend to use Team Explorer because, well, one, it's right there in the IDE. Imagine that. But also just because I spent a lot of time this, you know, earlier this year blogging and understanding Team Explorer, its commands. So unless I have to diff, like we were talking about earlier, like across branches or something that's not as mainstream, I'll have to jump to the command line, or something like if I have to do stash my changes somewhere, I'll drop to the command line. But then if I'm using, if I'm working on documentation, so using VS Code, that's where I could probably use some help here, because I'll start off with using the Git shell from the GitHub desktop application. So I'll fire up a Git shell, which uses, I have it configured to use Git bash. So I have my little bash prompt.
Friends don't let friends use Git bash.
Is that true?
Yeah.
All right, I'll have to hear more about this in a second. But then
on Windows.
On Windows, okay, because that's what I've always used. And then in VS Code, I'll sometimes start using the integrated terminal, and then I'll close the Git shell or the Git bash by just clicking the X, and then when I try to double-click Git shell again, it won't open because there's no more integrated terminals left. I get some bizarre errors. Wow. And usually I have to like reboot the machine. And so I'm like, okay, I am doing something just so fundamentally wrong. So I'm curious what you guys, like if you guys were going to start like brand new computer, like, you know, Christmas comes early and you have like a brand new computer and you were going to set it up. I'm curious, like, what tools do you all use for?
Go on, then. Ed, yeah, I've got mine. Go on, what do you use?
So for me, it's, I just install Git for Windows. And so one of the things about Git for Windows is it asks you a lot of questions when you install it, and they don't all have obvious answers the first time you use it. But one of the questions it asks is how you want Git in your path. Do you want Git in your path, or do you want like Git and all of the Cygwin Unix tools, the MSys tools, in your path? And I always say to that question, I want Git in my path and nothing else, because I don't want all those Unix tools, because a lot of them conflict with Windows file names, because like all of a sudden you'll run find and it's the Unix find instead of the Windows find. And that's really weird, actually. So that's it. I just install Git for Windows, set it up in my path so that only Git is in my path. And then I just use command, because I grew up. So, I mean, I mostly grew up on Unix, and I love Unix, but I still think Git bash is really kind of terrible, because it's the wrong thing. you're using on Windows. On Windows, I want to use Windows, so I just use CMD. And that's because I don't like PowerShell. I mean, PowerShell is an equally fine choice, but Git Bash is just the wrong thing on Windows, I think.
So what I do is similar, apart from, you know, so add it to my path. I don't have everything else. But then I install PoshGit, and I basically only use a PowerShell prompt for doing Git commands, because PoshGit on Windows gives you the auto completion, and it's so good. You know, it knows Git commands, but then when you're doing branches and stuff, you know, you do like Git branch or Git checkout. And then you start typing the first two characters of the branch name and hit tab, and it'll autocomplete for you. You do git add and hit tab, and it'll tab through all the files that if you were to have typed git status would be there. You know, it's so smart. So that's my command line experience. If I wanted, obviously Git for Windows and Git on Linux are tinily different beasts. And sometimes if you're doing some scripting and stuff and you want a true bash, then Git Bash doesn't really help you much there anyway. And so if I really, really, really needed that, then what I use is Bash on Windows, an Ubuntu shell, and apt-get Git into it, and then I can do everything that I could have done from a Linux machine with Git. I can just go do natively, and that's fine. In with regards to the Visual Studio Code workflow, in Visual Studio proper, or Visual Studio the IDE, sorry, I shouldn't say things like that. Marketing people will come down on me. I use Team Explorer mostly for doing the commit and doing maybe like switching branches and things, because it's smart enough that when you switch switch branches through Team Explorer, then it does all sorts of cool stuff where it unloads the solution file for you and loads it back in again all invisibly. So, you know, in the old days,
I didn't realize it was doing that.
Yeah. So in the old days, you know, you used to get that, like if your solution file had changed, you used to get, would you like to reload the project? And this dialog box would pop up with like five options, and then you'd have to channel a fish called Wanda and choose the middle one. The same's true with the Git stuff. It doesn't do that. You can flip branches really, really quickly, and it just magically works. And that's because it's a guy called Philip Kelly that wrote that stuff, and he was absolute genius and managed to get it working.
Philip Kelly. Okay, I'll have to go find him and say thank you.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I use it for mostly just for committing, because if you commit using Team Explorer, then you don't need to do a git add first. You know, it kind of keeps tracks of which files are there, and it makes it a lot easier, and it makes it a lot easier to take files out of your index and stuff like that. So that's what I do. Visual Studio Code, it has built-in Git tools, the graphical tools, and I sometimes use those. But what I tend to find is I just fire up a command shell outside of code separately. And I know there's this whole movement of people who really like things in their IDE. Me and Ed used to work with a guy who just loved having everything in his IDE window and loved having his browser in his IDE window, you know, and all this sort of stuff, and his shells and things.
Crazy.
It's just crazy, but he was crazy because he didn't want to, you know, on the distribution of Linux he ran a distribution of Linux rather than, you know, like Mac or Windows. B, he ran it without a window manager, basically, because that stuff just got in his way, you know. So he was using the IDE as window manager, really.
Wait, so you're not using a window manager, but you want everything into your IDE?
So I just have a command shell open separately and just use normal, you know, just use normal Git for Windows alongside Visual Studio Code, or on a Linux box or a Mac box, I just use regular Git alongside Visual Studio Code or whatever IDE I'm using. And again, in Xcode, I would use the built-in Git stuff for doing, I'd have it loaded and use it for doing commits. And it's handy to have it there, because then it'll do all your renames, and if you're doing refactorings and things, it'll just take care of all that stuff for you. But anything, like most of the times, half the time I do a push, you know, when I'm doing a push, I'll do it from the command line even, or when I'm switching branches, I'll do it from the command line. So one of the things we did a lot of testing on, Ed will remember this, was just, again, this was Philip that got this working, I think, was just be in a command line and do a git checkout, on a different branch, and then see the IDE update and then do it again and just keep doing it, and it would be reloading solutions and loading in the background. And it's like, this is magic. How does this work? Because you're doing it from the command line, it keeps in sync. Well, yeah. Anyway, so that's a long answer, but that's my workflow.
As a former Visual Studio tester, SDET, I can appreciate that.
Yeah, there was a lot of work there, it's because it was craziness. Now, it's a lot better nowadays in Visual Studio, the latest version of Visual Studio, because they've done a lot of work with the project file, and so the project files are a lot less crazy than they used to be with the new versions of .NET. And so, it does things like include star.cs, whereas before it had to specifically name every single CS file, and so you were constantly trying to resolve merge conflicts on CS project files.
I remember that.
Yeah, all pain, and there is no good XML merge tool on the planet, apart from like maybe Beyond Compare. Even that's not that great.
That's right.
So
yeah, no, the project system is so much better in Visual Studio and than it used to be, and that's really what prevents all those pop-ups. Like, you've changed, you check out an old version of a file, for instance, and you get this pop-up like, oh, it's changed on disk. What do you want to do? And it's like, oh, of course it changed on disk. I ran git checkout.
Yeah, but, exactly.
Yeah, the IPC and the Visual Studio knows a lot better what you're doing on the command line than it used to. So that's a big improvement.
So you mentioned something earlier, Sarah, about Git Stash. I never use Git Stash. I would just commit to a local branch that I haven't pushed. Do you use Stash, Ed?
Oh, well, no, never.
So my question is, if you don't use Git Stash, then how do you... I just realized my question is leading to a bigger question. So how do you clean up your history or your commits? Because I feel like I have 10, 15, 20 commits that might be really only one or two commits. Like I guess what Ed said earlier about like, what do I want my tree to look like? What do I want my history to look like? If I'm saying that correctly, that's why I use Stash a lot. It's like, oh, I need to switch over. I just don't want to look like every 10 minutes I've made a commit because I was like basically doing the equivalent of a save.
Right. And I think a lot of people worry about that. I think a lot of people don't, they want a clean history. And I totally respect that. But I think it's kind of up to the development team. I've worked on teams where if you look in history, it's like, oops, trying again, trying one more time, just commit after commit of I'm almost there. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, it kind of tracks the way you were thinking. Like GitHub itself, when I worked at GitHub, on GitHub, if you look at the history for github.com, the website, I mean, there'll just be like commit after commit after commit of like, whoops, I still haven't gotten this right. It's interesting.
So when I'm doing open source contributions, I'll quite often shape my commits a bit better, to try and look less like an idiot and try and tell a story sort of thing with my commit. And in that case, I would be using Squash a lot to create a new history, basically.
That's what I'm thinking. It's like in the public eye, we're working more and more in the open now. It's like I have to just get over this mental like, okay, no, it's not all supposed to be perfect on the first try. It's not what software is. It's like I know better than this, but one day I'll actually start doing what I know is right. Like, which is okay. Nope, that didn't work. But that. Like, I'll try again because it shows like, okay, here was the thinking, here was the process. Because a lot of times it can be like going back and saying, okay, why did I go down this path and not that path, or what changed? And maybe that can give a little bit more.
It does make it harder to go through history and see what things changed and why, though, when you do that.
Because it's all about the why. And sometimes that's just really hard to convey.
Especially when you're doing multiple commits because you're not really sure why yourself yet. You're still trying to get it working kind of thing. Yeah. I in a team, in like a team environment, just a internally kind of thing, then I'm like Ed, I don't do a lot of squashing for those things. I just push and be damned, kind of thing. I just like full transparency of where I'm at. And What's interesting there, though, is we ended up actually, because of that and the difficulties that creates, is a is like the view, you know, the history view. So there is like a pushes view in of history within VSTS, because you want to see, because it turned out that pushes for some repos, pushes were a more accurate, like were a nice way of looking at history rather than
I can see that.
Because it was a different point.
Because like pushes would be more equivalent to quota, like a commit versus commits, which is for me is like more of like a glorified save.
Yeah.
Like I need to step away from the computer in case, I don't know, something
just, you
terrible
know, in case
happens.
You want a backup. You know.
It's got it. It's right. So for squashing, I just realized I don't think I've ever used that command. Because I've just been kind of like doing my own thing for such a long time. Like it's like, hey, who cares? It's just my personal projects, my personal repos.
Yeah.
How often? So do you use like, how do you use squashes to be transparent but yet not showing every little step of the way?
So I use Rebase Interactive, which is kind of a whole new kettle of fish, because that'll let you commit, you know, you could create 30 commits over the course of a day that kind of get your change into the way you want it. And once you've got those 30 commits, let's say you want to narrow it down to just one, or maybe even two or three, you can use Rebase Interactive to squash those together. So you can like pick one commit and then squash others on top of it. So that will kind of show the thinking in a somewhat more granular level than just one big commit with all your changes. But at the same time, it can walk people through the thinking, maybe, you know, the process.
And one of the...
Can you describe the differences between those two? Like, yeah. I'm not following. Like, what's the difference between good squash and interactive Rebase using to squash?
That's a good question. So Martin, what do you use first? Do you just commit
again, it could be that I'm just not using Git squash right. One of the downsides of it is it's great for like shrinking down the last 10 commits into one. It's doing the same thing as a Rebase, I guess. It's good at shrinking down the last 10 commits into one or whatever, but what it's not good for is breaking those commits into like three chunks, and that's where interactive Rebase can come
in.
One of the advantages of the interactive Rebase as well is you kind of, it's more obvious to you that like nothing in Git goes away. It's all still there in the history, you know, it's all still in the Git log. But with squash, I've found myself, when I first started using it, I'd find myself losing stuff more, whereas with interactive Rebase it's kind of more obvious that it exists in a branch somewhere, and so I don't know. I could see why. The interactive Rebase thing though is, you know, and then you're in, it's just the syntax for it, and then jumping into Vim and stuff for both of them is like a nightmare. And this is one where I literally always have to look it up every time I go do this stuff, always read a tutorial again and again and again. I've still never done it. We had glorious visions of the UI we would build around this stuff at some point, and it's still a long way down the backlog.
Right.
Well, I can relate to that. Glorious visions of what a UI could
it'd be amazing
to improve. You know,
one of the things we wanted to do was like have a, and this was something we talked about years and years ago and still haven't, is so you know, if you like Rebase after you've pushed and you want to push on the same branch, that's bad because, you know, you're pushing a new version of a history to something you've already pushed to the server, kind of thing.
Right.
And then people who've pulled that version of the history can get and be in a bad state, and you know, it's hard for them to get their changes over top of your changes, blah blah blah. So what one of the things we wanted to do was kind of have a some UI that would let you Rebase all the way down to the last point that you'd pushed, like without, you know, just willy-nilly and just do it. But if you wanted to go past the point of last push, then you would, it's almost like, you know, Americans don't have this, it's a European, and this acronym never worked, this description never worked when I was talking to Americans, but I'll do it again anyway, as most of the podcasts are Americans, so never mind. In Europe, you have showers, and when you're trying to adjust a temperature dial, if you want to go above, and I'm trying to do the conversion in my brain, if you want to go above like 30, 35 degrees or something like that, if you want to go hot, then you have to push a button in and turn it. Oh, I know another example. You know when you've got one of those hot water taps in the kitchen, one of those magic can spit out boiling water taps? You can't just press the hot water tap to get the hot water. You've got to press another button on the hot water tap to get the hot water out.
Oh, you mean like in the kitchenette or in like the office kitchen? Yeah.
Like in a fancy kitchen in an office and stuff, you know, where it's where they're trying to
Gotcha.
where they've got
Yeah.
health and
Got their
safety people
processes.
and they're trying to idiot proof things, not in a kitchen where you just boil things and burn yourself. But in an office. So what I kind of wanted to do is some sort of UI that was a bit like that. That was, you know, you could do whatever you wanted up until the point of last push. But if you wanted to go back before the point of last push, then you needed to kind of, you know, push another button at the same time and shake a chicken or something to, you know, prove you or
Nice.
like answer a maths question or something to prove you knew what you were doing.
Like those captures that make you do differential equations or like integrate something.
Yeah, or just ask you a basic maths question if you try and do your email after 10 o'clock at night, so that
No, I
sort of
like that. I like
emailing
that.
team. Yeah.
So I think that, and I haven't actually played with it because I'm positively a command line guy, for better or worse. But I think that Git Kraken has. I hear people saying that they've got a really nice interactive rebase scenario, and they'll actually show you the graph, and you can kind of drag and drop nodes from one branch to the other, which is kind of crazy.
Wow, that would be awesome.
Wait, what is
Git
this?
Kraken, Kraken, like the animal.
That's on my to-do list to check out.
I think you should check it out. I mean, I played with it, and I was pretty impressed. But again, it's just not. Having a UI for Git is not something I want in my day-to-day workflow. But if you do, and I can totally respect that you might, I think Git Kraken is pretty good. Actually, there's been a glut of new tools coming out that for Git, for, you know, user interface stuff, and they all look really impressive. There's Git Kraken, there's GMaster. We've got to have all these folks on our podcast.
And there was another one just recently that I jotted down. It was like in the past week or
Is
two.
that the G Master one? That's fairly new.
It could
That's
be.
from
It
the
might be
Source
that one.
Tree people.
Not Source
Okay.
Tree, sorry.
Plastic SCM.
Yeah, Plastic SCM people. Source Tree is yet another one. That's from Atlassian. But
So I the human factors master degree, 3.5 years of suffering wants to speak out and just make a comment about from a UX perspective. The reason why people tend to want to have visual representations of things is just how like humans are wired. We're wired to be visual, and that's why it takes it's a it, like even though like a lot of times command line works, like we learn the commands, we learn the patterns, and it just works. But that's why like graphical interfaces are like tend to people have, might have like a more of like a compelled to use them, or at least for getting started. It's just because when you think about it, like how much we use eyesight to convey information and process information, that's where that comes from. And the other thing I've been thinking about that I need to just say, just to make those 3.5 years worth it, is when I think about dev tools and UX, one of the things that's interesting is when you look at there's a thing like where you have descriptive guidance versus prescriptive guidance. So prescriptive is when you're giving step-by-step instructions. Like you go to IKEA and you want to build a bookshelf. You're given exactly here's how to build a bookshelf, and you can only build it this way because these are only the parts that you have. And maybe you can get creative and hack something else with like your bookshelf. But it's like one way to do things. The other side is called descriptive, where it's like you go to the Home Depot. And no one's going to tell you how to build a bookshelf. What they'll do is say, here's how to use the circular saw, SAW. It's a little early for me. The accent comes out. But it's like when you go to the Home Depot, you buy the tools and they give you a descriptive device, like in general, how to use like a hammer or whatever you would do to put a drill to be able to put a bookshelf together. And so when you look at things like dev tools, if they fall more on the descriptive side. Okay, and you might say, okay, that's fine. There's usability studies and stuff like that for like circular saws, and I gotta find a better
No, I think
example.
it's a good
But
example.
But what it's interesting is that UX has historically been around.
Have a lot of common things in common. You know what I mean? I always count my fingers after I've used a circular saw, and I always do a git log after I've done a rebase or a squash. Yep. You know.
But what's really interesting is from UX perspective, all like the usability studies, all the heuristic principles, all the things like the best UI standards, like, quote unquote, the industry standards, they're all based on consumer prescriptive usage. They're not really based on descriptive usage. And it's like, so what I mean is like all the UX principles out there are for end user scenarios. Like I go to IKEA and I want to put together my bookshelf, but do those really translate to descriptive things like Git? And I think that's where things kind of start to fall apart. And that's just something I've always been fascinated with, is what would it take? What would those UX principles look like for things that are descriptive tools like Git, so that they can be usable right out of the box and not like these bizarre, like every time I want to like, what was it like? If you want to like get the current file in your working directory back to like the last commit, you have to do something like git checkout dash dash and then like the file name. It's like, where did this dash dash come from? This like makes no sense. So anyways, this has been in the back of my mind. So all right, I'll be quiet now.
No, that's
like, want to be an interview.
Turn it back
this
over
awesome.
To you all.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I you're absolutely right. Git is positively descriptive. I mean, there you can do anything you want, and you can do anything you want a number of different ways. It's like the Perl of version control systems. You know, Perl's motto used to be "There's more than one way to do it." I think I'm getting that right. But you bring up a really good point, and actually, this ties in with our last episode. We had Emma Jane Hogben Westby, and she was talking about Bazaar and how much more she prefers Bazaar because it is much more prescriptive than Git. Mm. And it guides you quickly as a beginner. It guides you towards success, whereas Git just kind of throws you in, and you're sort of off on your own. And that can be very challenging. It's hard to learn. It's a masterful sort of thing. So you get people who like woodworking. You get people who can master all these different sets of tools and visualize exactly what they want and know how to use the tools to get there. But that's not most people. Most people are just frustrated.
Yeah. I just want to do my job. Yeah. I don't want to be, it's like the analogy of the tea brewer. I want a button that says green tea or black tea. I don't want to be a master tea brewer and know exactly for this type of green leaf, I need to be slightly below boiling water.
And it needs to steep for this many minutes.
Exactly.
One of the interesting things about like the first generation of Git UI tools was that they were such a thin shim over the command line, and that's not what you want to do when you're building a UI, because when you're building a UI, you want to build a series of visualizations and constructs that allow people to be much more move things around, you know what I mean, and construct what they want to construct. And this newest generation of UI tools seems to be a bit more less locked to the command line, less like trying to help you build all the different options for the actual command that's underneath the hood, and instead give you the fundamental building blocks to then be able to go figure out what it is you want to do and how to do it, but even know that it's possible to do. You know, that's the amazing thing about UI, is that you can hint that things are possible to be able to do that you wouldn't even know it would be possible to do in Git if you weren't if you didn't know every single command off by heart. So I mean, like, who knows about a squash and a, you know, who knows about an interactive rebase unless they've been told? Nobody. But if you had UI that allowed you to say, hey, let me shrink these commits together, they'd be like, oh, okay, awesome, thank you. You don't care how that's working under the hood.
That's right.
Yeah, and that's because it's mapping more to like the user's mental model of like what is that action that they're trying to perform. And I was just thinking about what you said earlier about having some way to say, yeah, sure, you can rebase up until this point, because after this point, these commits have been shared somewhere publicly, and you would be rewriting history. I wish they had something like a magic button like that when you're about to do your very first commit, or you're about to do your very first major action, like a push or I don't know, whatever it is. Like, I wish there was like a warning that would pop up and say, Git is like no other source control system you have used before. If you understand that these are just pointers and not the actual snapshots of files at this point in time, then yes, you may commit. If not, go watch a training video.
So there's a couple of things to that.
That was one of the mistakes I made.
A couple of things
I just
to that
was
one,
like, of course I know how to use source control. And I just jumped right into it. And then like a week later, my coffee mug is flying across the room because I have over 1,000 merge conflicts in some like XML file. So yeah.
Couple of things on that though. One is it has got better. Like, and now when you do a git commit on a new machine and you haven't set up your username and email address, at least it kind of hints and tells you what to do now, which is awesome. But then it's really interesting when you're trying to sort of do that type of thing. There's a whole generation, like we've been around the block for far too many years, all of us. Use different version control systems. 70% of developers now are using Git. There's a whole generation of people who there has been no other version control tool. Git is source control. And that's amazing.
Wow, I never even thought about
I did a tweet the other day which was like,
I need to have myself a lie down. I never thought about
I'm so old, I remember when there were other version control systems to Git. And it was, that was only half a joke because there is this whole generation of professionals coming into the market now.
Yeah.
That Git is source control.
I was thinking the exact same thing. When you said that Git isn't like any other source control tool you've used, I mean, I worked with, so the average age at some companies is so young that, nobody there has ever used anything but Git. I was talking about Subversion to somebody and they were like, oh, I don't really know what that is. It's like, wow, blows my mind.
Yep. Oh, I wanted to make one other comment that there's now, because this is one of the first features I wanted to do when I was when I first joined GitHub. It's now in production. I just noticed is you can set up, if you make your email private on GitHub, there's another option that says, warn me in case I'm going to push my email address up to GitHub. So they have some sort of, I'm assuming like a GitHub, I'm not quite sure, but there's a check that when it pushes and you forgot to configure your username to your noreply.github.com, it will actually warn you and say, hey, you're about to, it won't let you actually do the push.
Nice.
Oh, that's great. So you can't accidentally disclose your email address if you turn on the private.
Exactly.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, I think this came live like just a few months ago.
Yeah, because there's people who switch that on GitHub and assume their email addresses are now private and not realizing
exactly.
That somebody can just get a clone and then get log and boom, they've got them.
Yep.
That tends to be how I email open source authors, by doing that exact thing. But there we go. Yeah. Cool. Hey, Sarah, we should start wrapping up. Where shall people find you on the interwebs if they want to learn more?
I just tell everyone, just Sarah, S-A-R-A. FORD, it's my handle for almost, I think it's my handle for everything. And no H, my parents were too cheap to pay for the extra letter.
Hey, but it helped you when buying domain names, so don't complain.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I wish I could have taken forward, but it was already, it was already taken.
Cool.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us, Sarah. I think this has been really wonderful.
Thanks, you guys. It was fun talking to you. And, I was about to take notes at one point. I'm like, what am I doing? This is all being recorded.
Well, so if you do want to take a note, so do you know why you need the double dash for checkout?
Please.
Because you can specify any branch there. It doesn't have to be master. So you can say git checkout other branch file name. But if you've got another branch named file name, the double dash disambiguates between the branch that you want to check out from and the file that you want to check out.
Is that what that is?
That's what it is. So
my head hurts. No, it's great. Thank you.
Blow my mind. We should end there. That's the show.
You know, it's like when you floss and you finally gets like, that popcorn or whatever out from between your teeth. And there's like pain, but it's like a relief sort of pain, like a good pain. That's what this is.
An exquisite form of pain.
That's what we're here for.
Get floss.
That should be the advertising slogan for our show, Ed.
I think it will.
We're like the pain when you finally get that floss out, when you finally get that bit of popcorn out of your teeth.
I want to buy the tool that's like Git Floss. Explain to me what this is supposed to be doing.
I love it. You and I will team up on that. So if you want more Git tips, you can follow us on Twitter. We're all things Git. And if you have questions for us, if you need that little bit of dental floss to get that little nugget out between your teeth, you can check us out. Our website is allthingsgit.com. Thanks again for joining us.